Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. Wednesday, 31st of July, the Church remembers St. Ignatius of Loyola, founder of the Society of Jesus. To mark this occasion, Francis, the first Jesuit pope in history, crossed the Tiber River to meet with his fellow Jesuits. He did so at the Mother Church of the Jesuits in Rome, known as the Gesù, consecrated in 1584, where he celebrated Mass. The church is a great Baroque building with a facade designed by two Jesuits by the name of Tristani and De Rosis, as well as other architectural features by no other than Vignola and Della Porta. But while the most striking artistic feature of the interior is the ceiling fresco, the grandiose triumph of the name of Jesus, perhaps the most imposing is the St. Ignatius Chapel, situated on the left-hand side of the transept, which houses the tomb of St. Ignatius. Among the Jesuits in Rome is an historian who teaches at the Pontifical Gregorian University. I recently sat down with him in our studios here in an effort to find out more about what it is that makes a Jesuit. Would you say that once a Jesuit, always a Jesuit, even when you become Pope?
Well, that's right. He's been a Jesuit for over 50 years. That's a long time, and that gets into your bones, into your lifestyle. That's right.
We've seen him place the seal of the Jesuits on the coat of arms, on his coat of arms as Pope. But as a Jesuit yourself, what do you recognise so far in what you've seen of the pontificate of this first Jesuit pontiff ever that palpably makes him a true son of the Society of Jesus?
I think his perseverance in his vocation, both as a Jesuit and as a priest, and then, of course, long time as bishop, and now he's answered a higher call still from the church to become pope. So that element of obedience we see very much. I think we see a deep spirituality in him, which is very important as a core, and also an openness to the world and to its issues, and especially the world in the sense of people. He's shown a great concern immediately that as Pope, Bishop, you're essentially Bishop of people, and Catholics, of course, at the heart, but other Christians. We know that the Archbishop of Canterbury visited him just recently and had a very good meeting, and also his openness to the wider world, humanity, all people.
You spoke about Pope Francis's openness. We know that the Jesuits embraced the teachings of the Second Vatican Council. In your opinion, are we going to see further implementation of these teachings in terms of collegiality, for example?
Well, he's very much emphasized that he's fundamentally Bishop of Rome, and his cooperation, of course, with the other bishops already. Vatican II has remained fundamental for the Church, and all the popes subsequently, of course, Paul VI, John Paul I, John Paul II, Benedict XVI have all shown their full loyalty to that great council. But, of course, a council has to be lived in the years in which we are now, 50 years later. And so, as you say, the council needs aggiornamento for this second decade of the 21st century.
How do you translate that word, aggiornamento, in English?
Well, updating. It's a good word, and of course we think of it especially with John the 23rd, who called the Second Vatican Council. So updating. Christ is, of course, the absolute foundation stone, but how we live the way Christ urged us to live and how we express the Christian message always needs to be updated to the particular time, particular country in which we live.
You spoke about the openness of Pope Francis in ecumenical terms, his meeting with the Archbishop of Canterbury, but it goes further than that, do you think, into interreligious dialogue as well?
Well, yes, surely. He's had an outreach, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, but also the Patriarch of Constantinople, the Primate of the Orthodox Church. We know he's also made mention of how salvation extends to outside the Church, to non-believers, and so on. So he's certainly shown that openness that Christ came to save, to visit, to be with all of humanity.
One of the hallmarks of Pope Francis is that he refers very often to St. Ignatius. He often quotes those words, ad majorem Dei gloriam, which are not familiar to everyone. Can you explain?
Well, for the greater glory of God, that's what ad majorem Dei gloriam means, for the greater glory of God. So in all of our lives, we have to make choices between this and that, and often between two things which are good, but we can't do both of them. And so that was fundamental to Ignatius's spirituality, and therefore for Jesuits, that we don't just try and follow, seek, do the good, but the best, what is for God's greater glory.
Another word he often uses is the word pietas. I understand that's the commitment to common good.
Yes, piety doesn't always sound so good in English. It means devotion, loyalty, but within a family. And we're a part of God's family, and so it means loyalty to God and to each other in God's family. So I think maybe loyalty, but also sort of affective loyalty. It's not just a cold loyalty. It's also with our affections, with our whole being. It's a beautiful word which goes well in Italian, but it's not so easily translated into English.
This idea of a family is something that Pope Francis feels very strongly. I mean, the very fact that he's not moved into the Apostolic Palace, but has stayed within a community. He belongs to a community as a Jesuit, doesn't he? That's very important to you as Jesuits, is it?
Well, that's right. As Jesuits, we are individuals, and we often have very individual ministries and works to do, but that sense of being with each other and living with each other as best we can, we're different characters. It's not always easy, of course, community life, but it's a very important part of our life, and surely Pope Francis has shown that in his early months as Pope. Living with other people is extremely important.
Pope Francis likes living in a community, and yet he actually has a mind of his own. He's often dubbed as a Pope of surprises, very much a mind of his own.
Well, that's right. He's emphasised his community side, but he's also faced with big decisions which he himself has to make ultimately on his own. So he seems to be a man who, like his predecessors, who take advice, but then they realise that the final decision is theirs and only theirs. And that, of course, requires an element of deep solitude, personal solitude, and solitude, of course, with God in prayer, but also human loneliness at times.
Would you say that Pope Francis thinks out of the traditional papal box in a way? And if so, are you as a fellow Jesuit surprised about that?
Well, of course, we're very honoured that a member of our order has been chosen by the cardinals and by the Church as the Bishop of Rome, the Pope. We weren't expecting it. And it's a great encouragement to all the religious orders, I think, too. You know, he's taken the name Francis, of course, the great Franciscan family. He wears white, and so that's an association with the Dominicans. And so it's been a big encouragement to the religious orders.
Ignatius and Francis, one and the same?
Ignatius and Francis, well, yes and no. We know that Ignatius had a big admiration, devotion to Francis, but he was called by God to found a different order with differing priorities, lifestyle, and so on. You might say he emphasized more the obedience, not so much the extreme poverty of the Franciscans. But by being a Jesuit and taking the name of Francis, Pope Francis has elegantly bridged this difference or this two ways, yes.
And our thanks there go to Jesuit church historian Professor Norman Tanner, who's also a well-known author. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.